This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 383 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. Joining me from Melbourne once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How's the headache?
Huh?
How's the headache?
Which one?
The one you've
Yours?
Got.
No, oh, my one.
No,
oh,
you're
oh,
my.
Yes.
You are my headache.
Oh, why are people so unkind? Yeah. No, I've got a bit of a nasty headache all day, but you know, I don't like to complain. I just make sure everyone I know knows it, and other than that, it's all good. You know?
Excellent.
I'm not complaining.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. How's your week been? Other than the headache, how's your week been?
W-E-A-K.
Right. Okay.
Pretty much. Been a week.
Right.
And yours?
Pretty busy. So last Friday, as promised, went out and did a little photo shoot for 2 hours during lunch.
Yes, I know. I was taking the photos.
Yeah. So it was a rush. It was a rush.
Yes.
And it was not the best time of day to be shooting.
Yes.
But anyway, we did what we could.
You did.
And I marked out 2 hours of the calendar at work and said I'm out for a long lunch. Didn't tell anyone I was going out for a photo shoot. Picked up the model, whose name is Tammy.
Doesn't look like a Tammy.
Doesn't she?
Doesn't look like a Tammy.
Okay. And we just drove down to the Lane Cove National Park, which was only a few minutes away from where I picked her up. And, just did a couple of little locations of portraiture and a bit of fill flash. Yeah. So go on. Cut loose. What was wrong?
Well.
Go on.
Well, what was the point of the shoot?
Look, to be honest, I feel as rusty as. I haven't done any portraiture for well over 12 months. So for me, it was just a chance to get out and try and freshen up the skills a bit. She just wanted some new shots for her portfolio.
And these are the rejects, are they? The showing. So you sent some nice one through to her for a So basically, she's a fairly edgy model.
Yeah.
Well, by edgy, I mean she puts in colourful hair, hair and makes herself think she's edgy.
Yep.
And then you put her in a basic green environment. There's no edge to the environment.
Yeah.
So I can understand, first and foremost, you may not know what she looked like. I'm hoping.
No. Tell me you didn't know. I didn't. I'd seen a couple of images.
But did she have all wacky colour hair and stuff when you saw those images, or just like more normal
one,
girl next door?
One did and one didn't.
Yeah. So if that was the case, so let's look at future-proofing stuff like this. If you got an image of a girl and then an image of the same girl fairly out there, my first question to said model would be,
which is your current look? Yeah.
Yeah. And if your current look comes back as, oh, it's pretty edgy, it's nose rings, it's a multicoloured hair, I'm not thinking park.
Yeah, right.
Lane.
Yep.
Because it just doesn't – the other look, the more subtle, softer look, you can see, well, maybe that's got a bit more synergy.
Yeah.
But if I'm trying to make the photos have any form of sense or logic to them or understanding of why they're in that environment, it's like, well, it doesn't coalesce. You could put her in a stingy, dark alleyway, grungy, horrible, and that would be more in keeping, something a bit edgier.
I did throw the idea to her. I said, you know, you come from the bush. You probably don't want to do a bush shoot. Do you want to find something industrial? And she said, oh, I don't really mind. And
yeah, but
see, I only had 24 hours.
That's a clue.
I only had 24 hours to plan this shoot. Like,
yeah, I know. It was pretty quick.
And I didn't know of an industrial looking environment close to work that would be vacant enough for us to shoot in.
So where do you work? What kind of environment are you working in?
Well,
industrial state?
I wouldn't call it industrial, but it is populated by businesses, but they're all like office blocks.
Yeah. So lots of glass.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not...
I would have thought, though, that there's... Because not necessarily having to go onto their properties, But using things like lens compression and lens angles, you could have taken some small segments of that environment.
Oh, okay.
And you wouldn't have to have traveled as far, which is a good thing.
Yep.
Closer to work. You've got, once again, you've got, when you're planning shoots, if you're thinking, oh, this is the location, well, how are you going to use that location? What lenses are going to tell the story? And how, forget about the model, what's the background about? First and foremost. So if you're shooting, I'm going to do wide angle, we're going to have this great vista in the background. Well, how does that then match up with the subject matter?
Yeah.
And then if you say, where I am, there's lots of, it's car parks, and it's glassy stuff. There's not much big stuff there that's going to look any good. Well, then you go, can I shoot all at 200 mil and stand back and have a really narrow viewpoint behind the subject and therefore put this edgy model with some cement walls behind her, with some glass panels behind her.
Yep.
Something that's maybe a bit more in keeping with her look.
Yeah, yeah.
So I find the images incongruent simply because of look versus location.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Problem number one.
Yep.
We've just started to do.
Of course you have.
Okay, so you've got a standing on a picnic table in two of the photos.
Yeah, and
why?
Your point is? Why?
Should that be enough said?
Well, I guess I was trying to play up the edginess as best as I could in the environment,
So I'm so edgy I can stand on a picnic table and no one's going to tell me off.
That's
it. That works. No, you can see the attitude. She's got this busty little top on, this multicolored hair. She's got hands on hips, standing on top of the picnic table saying, nah, you're not eating here. I'm standing here.
Well, I did tell her. I instructed her with that shot. Square onto the camera, give me lots of attitude.
And tell me, no eating picnics on my table, I'm standing.
Dear.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
In any way, shape, or form. Yeah. We've got the, go past those ones, and we go to the ones where they're sitting on a rock. Fabulous.
Yep.
The brightly lit bit of sunlit road in the background behind her.
Yeah, I know.
But once again, so that's a shot where maybe a 200 mil lens with less width and less background behind her may have had more impact.
Right.
Because of all the shots, that's the one with the best light.
Right.
On her face.
Yeah.
The light on her legs is no good, but at least the light on her face has got a little bit of kick. There's a little bit of shadow play going on, but you could have eliminated all that world in the background by lens choice.
Yeah, so that was shot with my 70 to 200. It's just I was at the wide end, not the long end.
You're at 70, yeah. So, once again, there's all this space. Once again, if you're going to include stuff in a shot, what's it saying?
Yep.
And it's saying she's sitting on a rock next to a road with her back. So she's looking with her back to the road, looking over her shoulder at something coming down the street, maybe. I don't know. But it's just, once again, I've got to understand what the shots are. Yeah, if it's just a photo of a pretty girl.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work, or is it, it's just, and I think she's got quite an interesting face,
yep,
shape-wise. She's got quite interesting hair. Where's your real close-up portraits? The right in the grills.
They're not in there, actually. I did one close-up of her, but I didn't include that in the shots I sent to you.
2 hours.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I did say I was rusty, right?
Yeah, that's okay. It must have been one of your better ones. Keeping those ones to yourself. So then you've got this other shot of her on a rock in the sunlight.
Yep.
With this really horrible light on her face, like a big spot of hot sunlight on her nose and a big blob on the end of her chin. Yeah. So you're trying to get a bit more of an edgy pose on that one, okay?
Yep.
Maybe she'd have had her thrusting her face out towards that light.
Okay.
Yeah, get her face fully. If the light's a problem where it's she doesn't always have to be looking at you. If she was looking up towards that light, the light would be really nice and even across her face. She'd have some nice little shadows. She could have really pushed out those arms and really give it an arch to the back and really give it an edgy sort of look in this really hard light.
Right. So
it's a harder pose in harder light.
Yep.
It's always tough with white pants, too, I've got to say. They're always going to be so bright.
Yeah.
But, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's always tricky. Then she's standing on some rocks by the water.
Yep.
Next. And once again, hot spot on her nose, hot spot on her chest, hair blown out on the left,
yeah.
A hot spot on her cheek. Yeah. Again, who's the boss? The light.
Yeah.
So the light's what you got to you know, work to it, not it to you. And this is what often happens. You put someone in a spot and say, "Look at me."
Yeah.
If you're all focusing on the look at me, you don't see all the problems what the light's creating.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do rim light on someone with hair that light color too.
Yeah. And the problem with this water shot was that I was keeping myself to a 250th of a second because I was trying to throw some fill light in on the front of her. To try and, you know, try and balance against the sunlight, but I just didn't have the reach.
Yeah.
Because she's about, she was about 10 meters away from me where I was
shooting. Where was the flash?
Beside me.
Why?
I couldn't get it any closer. I tried to get closer and I ended up taking a bath and ended up with my right foot and ankle in the water and ended up walking around with a soggy boot for the next 4 hours. So I gave up on the idea of trying to get the flash any closer. So don't worry. I had thought of it. I was trying to get the flash closer.
But once again, could you not have had the flash camera right?
That's what I was trying to do.
She's standing. Well, how did she get out there?
She walked along that wall on the left.
Oh, okay. So she's got more ability than you, Zoys.
Yeah.
A little bit more stable. Okay. The next one where you've obviously done some post on this one and warmed up the tones a lot.
No, I actually shot it with a half CTB gel.
Yeah.
And so that allowed me to then...
So by CTB, you mean CTO? Just checking.
No, CTB.
Okay.
Because what I wanted was for the light hitting the left side of her, as the camera sees her, to be quite blue, which would then allow the background to get warmed up in post. What I did was when I post-processed that image, I zoomed in on the face and went for a white balance from that. And because it was blue, it then shifted everything.
Blew out, yeah.
Everything warmer. Yeah.
Well, that's your least worst shot of the lot.
Thank you.
Because, I mean, once again, she's edgy, and she's got a bit of an edgy expression, and you can't quite see her face, which kind of helps.
Yeah.
And, there's a bit of attitude to the shot.
Yep.
That at least seems to reflect probably a little bit more of her personality.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yep.
Then the next one where she's got her back to the rail.
Yep.
It's your best lit shot. That's obviously your off-camera flash.
Yep.
Camera left, I'm imagining.
Yep. And same.
That's nicely lit.
Same deal. Half CTB gel.
Cool.
Yeah.
So just for those who don't know, color temperature blue.
Yep.
CTB. So one CTO, color temperature orange, warms up light coming out of the flash. CTB.
Cools it down.
Color temperature blue.
Yeah.
Cools down the light.
Yeah.
So if you cool down the light in the face, but nothing else in the scene is cooled down, then you warm up the skin tones and the face look normal, then everything else is going to get much warmer because you're warming up the palette, basically.
And vice versa.
If you want to make the background look really cold, you warm up the face, then drop the color temperature back, the white balance back in post to normal skin color and your background grows really blue.
Yeah.
Nice. And then you got your black and white one, which once again a little bit of edge, which
if you go back to that the one that you said was my least worst shot, so two back, it's basically from that same position.
Yeah, you can kind of see it. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I was rusty, and we only had limited time, and we're shooting in harsh daylight, and it was the best I could do under the circumstances.
And can I make one other suggestion? Because, hey, I get it. I know it was hard and you don't do it very often and I'm being mean just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
But I would suggest if you're in that situation, again, where there's a little, not much time, two things, look versus location, try and get some sort of synergy. Second one, only go for one photo. I've got 2 hours to create one shot.
Oh, okay.
And take your time. You don't need 20 average shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, just don't put, if we can craft one really nice image, great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that takes all the pressure off you to have to run around to different locations, takes all the pressure off you have to, to try and do lots of photos. Hey, we're going to try and get, because in a portfolio, you don't want 20 shots all in the same outfit anyway.
No, true.
You don't want 20 shots of all the same hair colors in the same location. If you're going to get a photo for the portfolio, you're only going to want one, maybe two at most.
Yeah.
So in your 2 hours, take the pressure off yourself on how many photos you need to create.
Yeah, right.
And say, let's go and try and capture one really, really good one. And if that takes us 45 minutes of our 2 hours, so be it.
Yep.
And then once we feel we've got it, then we can maybe look at doing a couple of extras.
Yeah.
But our goal is one really, really good image.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and use it as a collaboration between you and her.
Yep.
To drop and try and find out, well, how do we make this one really good image out of the time we've got?
Yep.
And anything on top of that's a bonus.
Yeah, nice.
Remember, my goal per year is 4 to 6 shots I really love.
For the year?
For the year.
Wow.
And most years I don't make it.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
So, I'm thinking I take lots of photos that are pretty good. Yeah, lots of photos that a lot of people say, oh, that's really nice. But ones that I've gone, oh, yeah, I've nailed that. That's evidence come together perfectly. 4 to 6. Look, in a phenomenal year, I might do 10.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah, but that's so what are you trying to achieve in 2 hours? Not saying, hey, you might have a day where it all comes together, you get 20 phenomenal images.
Yeah.
But my God, the pressure you put yourself under trying to do that every single time.
Yeah.
It's not. So just take it easy on yourself. Yeah. Try and craft one really good image first and take as long as it needs to set that up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather see someone take 15 to 20 minutes to set up a shot and 2 minutes to shoot it than vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is what most people do. Most people take very little time to set up a shot. They don't solve the problems.
Yeah.
And then they shoot lots of photos and they go to the next location, do the same thing, shoot lots of photos, and all they end up with a whole bunch of photos that are a bit frustrating because nothing's quite – didn't all come together.
Yeah.
We didn't manage to eliminate as many of the problems as possible.
Yeah.
So just take it easy, you know. And if the model goes in with that expectation as well, hey, we're here to try and get one really good image,
yeah.
then everyone's happy, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, you just can't even get that.
Yeah.
You're in deep trouble.
Having said all that, she was absolutely fantastic fun to work with.
Sure.
Yeah, she had great attitude. Yeah, as you said, she's got a bit of an edginess to her, which was really good. She took direction, although my direction may not have been fantastic. She took what direction I gave her.
Yeah.
And I asked her, whereabouts, she's up the coast. She's up just north of Taree. And we got, talking through the shoot, and she mentioned she's got horses and I love horses. And I said, look, maybe, some weekend I'll make a trip up there and we'll do a shoot up in your neck of the woods. And she said, yeah, that'd be great. So, I'd really like to shoot with her again.
Did she say this before she saw the photo she took or after?
Before. but look, she was really happy with what we shot. She's absolutely
She's not going to sell you to a GFA. But remember, most models, especially inexperienced ones,
they got
no idea either.
No.
No, yeah, but they've got no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, it's in focus. It looks like me. Think of models like Facebook. Oh, you're the world's best photographer. Yeah.
So that was Friday. Then Saturday was the annual cadet unit drill comp. Which I've shot, I think, three times in the past now. And so this twice in the past. This was the third one. So that's a full day thing where all of the cadet units on the Central Coast, which is about 6 different cadet units, all come together and they have essentially they've rehearsed for the couple of months leading up to it, a small squad who have to march and parade and follow instructions and they get marked according to their parade ground presentation. And so I photographed our cadet unit during their parade, and then they have an afternoon of, sporting activities where each cadet unit is competing against all of the other units. So I shot about 320 images for the day and handed off about 240 of them. Yeah, so that was a fun day as well. So, yeah, cameras
so
had
it. 2 days in a row of shooting.
Yes, which is unusual for me.
It is.
So
wow, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that's your week.
More gadgets arriving from eBay every day. So
is it like what you got in? Anything exciting?
A lens hood for the 20mm because it didn't come with a lens hood. A knockoff of a Gorillapod. It's a cheapy version of a Gorillapod.
Yeah, can I just pass you on those? Let me make a little warning. Hmm. Don't put anything. Don't hang it from trees. Don't put it anywhere where. Because what happens with these ones is the legs separate.
Yep.
And the stuff falls off.
Right.
So okay, if I might be standing up on the ground or standing on something.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it's not really gonna. It's not holding. It's not. It's pushing down on the joints rather than pulling on the joints.
Right.
So there's not much chance of them going wrong. But if you're suspending it from a pole or something,
right.
There's a pretty good chance those little joints separate and the thing just falls down. I've seen that happen.
You're talking about the dodgy knockoffs.
The balls on the legs.
You're talking about the dodgy knockoffs, not the gorilla
pods. Absolutely. No, the gorilla pods are really so you can pull like crazy on those things.
Yeah.
They stay together. But just the dodgy knockoffs are, hey, they're cheap for a reason, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So just be a little wary with where you put gear and, yeah.
Yep. My new set of step-up rings has arrived, so I can now use the new filters that I've bought. The only problem is I still don't have a cable for doing long shutter things, so I still can't really...
And all those lightning storms.
I know. However, I did go up on the roof of our building yesterday and just did one or two test images with the Nissi 10-stop filter just in the daylight. And I've got to say the colour neutrality on it is fantastic as 10-stop filters go. Yeah.
I'm told Nissi are very, very good.
Yeah, which brings up one of the little points that I was going to get to later on, one of the things that I had on my list of things to discuss. I came across this fantastic little tip on a YouTube video this week, and this is for landscape photographers who like to shoot with a 10-stop filter. And I'll admit, I'm probably the last guy on the planet to learn this tip. But just in case I'm not, I'll share it anyway because I thought it was awesome. And why I've never worked this out for myself in the past, I don't know.
I think the listeners know. Bruce.
Okay. So basically the theory is you're going to shoot a shot with a 10-stop filter. So you set up your tripod, you position your camera, you get your composition right. You decide what aperture you're going to shoot at, and generally you're going to shoot with a fairly narrow aperture, maybe f13, f16, f19, because you want lots of depth of field and you want to reduce the amount of light coming through.
Yes.
And you go to manual focus because obviously once you put your 10-stop filter on, your AF is out the window.
Yes.
So you set your focal point to the hyperfocal distance of your lens, and then you put the 10-stop filter on the front of your camera, whether it's a thread-in type or a plate, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And then, this is the killer. I love this.
Go on, do it.
You change your ISO to 6400. And however many seconds...
Hey, so what are we starting with?
Well, we're starting with... We're in manual exposure, right? And you've decided on your...
What ISO were you set on, though?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. No. We're coming back to it. Just wait. So you go in with manual exposure. You've dialed in your aperture to what you want.
Yeah.
You let the camera tell you that at 6400, it needs X number of seconds to get a correct exposure. If it comes up and says it wants 1 second, then at 100 ISO, that will be 1 minute of exposure. And for every number of seconds that it needs at 6400 ISO, that's the number of minutes it'll need at 100 ISO. And I thought that was a really cool little tip. Does that make sense? So basically, you've got 7 stops between 1 second and 1 minute, and you've got 7 stops between 6400 ISO and 100 ISO.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'd never encountered that before, and I thought that is really cool, and it's such a great way to, you know, do a test shot at 6400. You know, let's say it says it needs 4 seconds, so you do your 4 second exposure, you get to see the image straight away, and you go, okay, as far as exposure goes, that's exactly what I'm after. So then you turn your ISO back to 100, and you know you need 4 minutes to get the same exposure at 100 ISO, and boom, off you go.
Boom.
I love it.
It's so easy.
It is. Like I said, I'm probably the last guy on the planet to learn it. But I thought it was
good. It makes sense, but I don't shoot this stuff, so I've never bothered to learn it. But I'm sure there's lots of people who are learning it for the first time and going, that Bruce actually knows his stuff. Well, he knows how to read stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So how's your week been?
I went up to the snow. It snowed. Yeah. I went to the, on did you, Monday.
Did you,
the kids,
did you
the kids
take your memory card this time?
Well, not really. Sort of.
Sort of.
Funny thing is, I messaged my mate Simon. I'm going up the snow. Got my memory card this time. And he said the same thing. Got memory card. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I got it. I took off. Went about 2 or 3 minutes. Left the whole entire camera bag behind. Come back, get that, you know. So I got, yeah. And then it was just diabolical. There was nothing shootable. It was all wet and sloppy and it was snowing, but it was blizzardy, so there was nothing to shoot.
Oh, and the light would have been as flat as.
Oh, it was just diabolical. And frankly, I only took a 28 to 300 with me.
Right.
And it wasn't wide enough for everything I wanted to do.
Yeah, right. Why didn't you have your 15 to 30 with you?
So I want to give the 28 to 300 some love.
Right, okay.
Because everyone's been talking about the 18 to 400 Tamron.
Yes.
Lately, but that is for an APS-C sensor camera.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, for those who want some of that sort of love who use 35mm, I thought, well, I'll use a 28 to 300. It's not quite as wide number-wise, but it's an incredibly versatile lens. But, of course, there's nothing worth shooting.
Yeah.
So I've become brand ambassador to two new companies this week.
Right. One of them would be the Image 360.
The Insta 360.
Insta 360, sorry.
Yeah. And they announced and finally launched on Tuesday morning our time the Insta 360 One, the one that we should have showed that video clip from last week's episode. The one we were going, how the hell do they do that? And you said it's fancy drone work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Not fancy drone work. It's done by the camera.
Even though it's in your hand?
Yep. Well, the camera's not in your hand. The selfie stick is.
Oh, okay.
You put it on a selfie stick and edge it and then spin it around yourself, but the camera and the software built in eliminate the selfie stick.
Right.
It basically content aware as you spin around and you have an invisible selfie stick.
Wow.
So it looks like the camera's just floating in the air around you. How astounding is that?
That's amazing.
Absolutely. So I was blown away by that. And of course, one of my other sponsors, I should put in it first, is DJI. Drone company.
Wow.
Same company in Australia imports both those products. So I'm doing stuff with these guys. But of course, with drones, A, you've got to be actually operating them.
Yep.
Flying them. Yes, some of the new ones can fly around you, but it's still, there's chances of stuff going wrong. They fly into stuff, the wind might be too strong, all the stuff that requires a certain amount of skill to be able to at least work with.
Yeah.
Well, a camera on the end of a stick, not so hard. If you can spin a stick around yourself, you can probably do this.
Yeah, right.
You know? So it has this remarkable capability of producing footage like pretty much nothing else on the planet, which is astounding. But one of the other features that I love, and I can't remember what they call it, is but you basically just shoot your video in 360, so it's filming everything.
Yeah.
It's 4K video,
yep.
So it's pretty high-quality stuff. But then using the app on your phone, let's say you're doing, I don't know, you've got your camera stuck on top of a motorbike's handlebar.
Right.
Okay. You're flying there. So it's filming all, the 360 is filming everything, the road, the sky, in front of you, side, behind you. It's filming everything, okay?
Yeah.
But then on the app on your phone, you can then record off the footage that you recorded, just a normal ratio, 16:9 ratio footage. And you can say, hold the phone out down the street and then pan it to your right and then spin it around so it's looking at you and looking behind. And you can film an entire sequence of just normal footage for normal TV from the midst of this 360 footage.
Wow.
So it's record everything, decide later what the film is.
That's crazy.
Which is when you're doing stuff like if I was in the Holi Festival, when stuff's just going crazy and you don't know what's going to happen, film everything, and then you can follow individual people or follow as someone throws powder, you can follow the powder through the air, you know?
Wow.
All this astounding stuff. So I'm getting one. They should be in Australia by the end of next week, which is too late for me for my weekend away in Ararat, but I'll have one to take for to India for the Pushkar Camel Fair and the Festival of Lights and all the other cool stuff we're going to do in India. So I'm looking forward to some astounding footage.
Wow.
Absolutely astounding footage. So it's called the Insta 360 One and just simply amazing. So I'm now the brand ambassador for these guys and obviously also for DJI drones.
Yeah, so, right. So there'll be a drone workshop coming up soon.
Well, I don't think I'll be teaching drones, but I'll be using them. So I'm going to pick up a DJI Mavic Pro next week to take out for my Ararat weekend.
Nice.
If I have time. It's the first week getting out. I'm not going to have sure if I'm going to have time to get out there and fly and learn how to use it, etc. But I'll give it a shot and try and get some stuff of what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I'll certainly be going off and doing it's going to be great for location scouting, for all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So I assume you've got a little action video camera that you can hang off it?
No, so the Mavic's got its own built-in 4K video camera on a gimbal.
Nice.
So fully image-stabilized gimbal, does, as I said, 4K video, and I'm guessing 12 megapixel still photos.
Yeah, right.
Full DNG capability, so you can get a bit of dynamic range out of them.
Nice.
And the thing's as steady as a rock in the air, so you can do up to 8-second long exposures.
What?
Flying in the air, yeah.
It's stable enough to do an 8-second exposure?
8-second long exposure, yep.
Wow.
Pretty astounding,
That's impressive.
So I'll be giving some of that stuff a go over the next few weeks, and we can talk about that. So that's two cool new people on board, which is kind of nice.
Nice.
That to go with the MagMod people from the week before. Did I mention MagMod last week?
No. What's MagMod?
MagMod is the flash modifiers.
Oh, okay.
And it's all magnet-based, so they have a magnet adapter that goes onto your flash head, and then all your accessories just magnet on.
Oh, nice.
It's the magnet modifiers, and they have all the normal spheres and grids, but they have some great Fresnel lenses to focus your light.
Yep.
And a whole bunch of gobos and little window patterns and different shapes. Best to throw patterns up on a wall.
Nice.
So all that stuff's pretty darn cool. So they're another new sponsor. I was trying to hold out. They wanted me to become an ambassador for them, and I said, I like your T-shirts. I'll do it if I get one of them, their T-shirts, or a couple, then one or a few.
Yeah.
And they said, we don't do them. They were just like for a special event, and we don't have any anymore, and we weren't planning on getting any more. Is this going to be a problem? And I thought, maybe. But they promise the next time they do a special event T-shirts, they'll make some for me.
Oh, cool.
So, and they said it's the first ever of any ambassador in the world who's always been happy to get. They said everyone's normally happy just to get free stuff. You don't care about the free stuff. You just want the T-shirts. Yeah, I don't lust after more gear. I've got plenty of gear, But shirts always come in hand. The more T-shirts you own, the less you have to do the washing.
That's right.
This is seriously true. So that's been my week. I've been doing that and, talking with those guys and getting some stuff in plan for what I can do with them, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
But, yeah, so I've had a busy-ish week.
Cool.
In some ways. Yeah.
Excellent.
So we talk about some gear and then let these people go home?
Yeah, why not? Do you want to do your stories or my stories?
Look at I didn't actually put a link in for this, so you have to do some work and find that. But did you see Canon's new lenses that they announced this week?
I know there was an 85 1.2 LS, IS?
1.4,
sorry.
But it's their first 85 with built-in stabilizer.
Yeah.
So welcome to the party, Tamron said that for a while.
Yes.
But it is a 1.4, not a 1.8. So right. I'll give them that. It's a little bit more wider.
Yeah.
No, they released three new tilt shift lenses this week.
Okay.
But they're all macro tilt shift lenses.
Right.
Which I thought was absolutely fabulous.
Right.
Well, you can think about all the versatility of macro stuff, but then be able to do tilt shifting for error for parallax errors and all that kind of stuff and distortions that you'd be able to adjust and play with.
Yeah.
I thought they were damn cool. So they've got three. I think they've got a
there's a 45-28.
There you go.
A 24. Can't see the aperture on that one, and then a 17-4.
Yeah, really. Okay, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I think
The whole tilt shift thing, I just don't get. Like, I understand it if you were a working architectural photographer that a tilt shift lens comes in very handy for getting rid of the collapsing wall syndrome, but using them for that sort of miniaturized village look. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I don't. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that. That's just a bit, you know.
Yeah, that's really fun. Imagine, the first 87 times you see it.
Imagine you're a product photographer.
Yeah.
Okay. You're a product photographer doing close up stuff, yeah. And now you've got the ability to do a tilt shift to fix a lot of the errors that happen when you with your angles and stuff. If you're shooting 24 mil from down low on this product, all of a sudden you've got the ability. So think of this as not just your amateur tool, but as a working pro tool, which Canon actually makes a few products for.
Yeah,
yeah, it's got some incredible potential. I was really excited about it in all genuineness.
Okay,
I thought it was a great. It was something that was different, finally, not just the same. Like the 85 1.4 image stabilizer, ho hum, who cares? But tilt shift macro, fabulous. I can see a lot of potential for that. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting to see what people are gonna do with them. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, cool.
And then I couldn't resist. Oh, these new coasters. Canon 85mm 1.2 coasters. Far more exciting than the lenses.
What do the coasters do?
Have a look. Click on the link.
Are they just lens caps?
No, they're coasters. You put your drinks on.
Oh.
They're coasters.
Okay.
Have a look at them.
Okay, so why are there pictures of lenses? Or is that the storage container?
When you connect all the coasters together, they make a shape of a lens.
Oh, that's cool. That is very cool.
You're thick as three planks of wood, but it's very, very cool. So when it's all together, it looks like a Canon 85mm lens.
Nice.
But it breaks down into five coasters to put your cups on.
Nice.
You saw, and all you need now is one of those 24 to 70 lens cups to drink out of.
That's right.
Your Canon 85mm lens coaster.
Excellent.
I thought they were a bit of fun. I can see lots of photographer fathers getting in for Father's Day.
Oh yeah, you know, totally.
Type of stuff. That's pretty cool. What else did I find this weekend? Think at all?
Leica's never changing brand identity.
Yes. So there was this little thing there showing Leica over the last 100 years. Their logo for the last 100 years.
Wow, has not changed.
It's exactly the same for over 100 years.
Good on them.
Which is pretty cool. And it goes in there about talking about brand identity and so it's pretty cool that 100 years of exactly the same.
You know, as you know, I work in radio. I have done for 30 years. And as a commercial producer, one of the things that we are constantly trying to get our clients to understand is come up with something for your advertising campaign and stick with it. Just stay with it, because the longer you stick with it, the more it has a chance of getting into, you know, people's brains. You know, it's like if
Absolutely.
I go, duh, 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 everyone knows that that's Toyota. Exactly, right? Like you find something like that and you stick with it long enough and it just becomes part of the cultural norm.
Becomes the brand.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how brands become things.
That's right.
So, like, all of a sudden, like, vacuum, go and get the vacuum. It's go and get the Hoover.
Exactly.
You know? I want a Coke. Well, people don't want a Coke. They want a cola.
Yeah.
But the brand became the thing.
That's it.
You know? And if you say, oh, what a feeling to anybody.
Yeah.
They think Toyota.
Exactly.
You know? So that's what Leica have done. They've maintained this this exclusivity and longevity and stuff. And, well, yeah, you kept the logo for 100 years exactly the same.
Yep.
You know, we are constant. We're as good now as we were then. You know, we're famous for our cameras back in the 30s, but we're still the same.
Yeah.
Because we've still got the same logo. Yeah, there's that consistency to it all.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I thought that was pretty good.
Before you move on, slightly related to that, it's a little bit off track. I did once hear an anecdote that came back to, you know, advertising and marketing, and it was all about what companies did during an economic downturn. So during a recession or a depression, and they tracked all these companies who reduced their advertising expenditure during a recession, and they also tracked companies who kept their advertising budget the same during a recession, even though they were struggling to maintain it, they kept their expenditure the same. And what they found was that after the economy turned back up and started to grow again, 5 years out, the companies who had cut back on their advertising budget during the recession had grown by 50 to 100%. And the companies who had maintained their advertising expenditure through the recession 5 years out had grown 500%. And it was because during that recession, when no one had money to spend, they kept advertising, even though they weren't getting a return on it. But it made their brand sink into the minds of people. And then when people had money to spend again, when the economy got stronger, it was those brands they gravitated towards because they had front of mind awareness.
Man.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway.
It is.
Moving on.
Next one was a photographer used a McDonald's Big Mac box to do portraits with his iPhone.
Yes. I had this on my list as well. I thought it was very clever.
An awful lot of post-production, of course. Yeah. To make it actually look good. Because as you can see, in the real-life example, it's...
Nothing like the processed version.
Yeah. So it's not great light, but it does the job. It puts light where you need it to be.
But it's problem-solving.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But said super massive post-production to make the photos look good. Yeah. But, good as far as a certain style, shall we say.
Yeah.
Because not everyone's going to like that style of over-sharpened, over-processed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And then I came across this little interesting thing. It was mostly a push for a iPhone app, but I thought it was kind of interesting on how to edit color for consistency and create your own style. So it's talking about color grading your images,
right?
Which is something a lot of video guys do. So this guy called Sean Tucker.
Yep.
He does this little 15-minute video talking about how he uses color grading to keep consistency across all of his photos.
Right.
And explains how that's, you look at most professional photographers these days and you'll see there's a very similar color palette across a lot of stuff. So even if you ignore the app, that he's talking about and about the examples. It's a pretty good read. Watch, I should say, because 15-minute video.
Somewhere back along the way, I don't know if we mentioned it on the podcast, but I saw or heard somewhere about how so many sci-fi movies use this teal and orange color palette because are complementary colors. And when you hear it and then you start watching films, you just see it everywhere. I'd never noticed it.
He talks about the teal and orange in Mad Max in this one. He uses Mad Max Fury Road as an example. That's about it for me.
Yeah, nice. All right. Well, I shall go to the things that I had. Well, I can get rid of the McDonald's thing because we've covered that. The next one was a little bit of a humorous thing on F-Stoppers about the future predictions about photography. We won't go into it. I'll just have the link in the show notes for those that want to have a look. It starts out sounding quite sensible, but then some of the future predictions just get sillier and sillier and sillier. It's quite a good read. There's a good laugh to be had there. The next one was, I don't know if everyone remembers the story of the photographer who gave his camera to a macaque monkey, and the macaque monkey took a selfie. And this guy, this photographer, has declared bankruptcy because it has cost him everything to try and get the royalties from that image. And basically the courts have ruled against him saying, no, you didn't take the image, so it's not your image. The monkey can't claim the royalties, therefore the image is in the public domain.
Yeah.
Which is pretty harsh.
It is.
Particularly when you read the story and he goes into how the image came to be and that it was not just a chance encounter. He actually spent time with these monkeys over weeks training them to what to do with a camera. So it wasn't just a freak accident.
Well, so he says he might have made that story up after.
Well, that's possible too. Who knows? So anyway, there's a link there for anyone that wants to read up on that story. The next one is a link to a YouTube video. Lightning strikes feet away from a man while his camera's rolling. This guy was standing on his balcony during a lightning storm. And this lightning bolt strikes the end of his balcony. I'm only gauging from having watched the video, but it probably no more than about 5 or 6 meters from where he was standing. And you actually see bits of debris, which I'm assuming are parts of the wood of his balcony, go flying through the air after this lightning strike. And, of course, then he pans around to where it's touched down, and you can see that the wood's all scorched and, yeah, pretty scary stuff. And the last one that I've got is a new camera just came out. This was on Petapixel, and a nicely written article, which basically, if we were to sum it up in just a few words, is you don't need the latest, greatest thing. anyway, it's a good read for anyone that hasn't already encountered a story like that. So, yeah, Steve Peters called BS on the Leica story from last week. He said on Facebook, this was the one about the woman who put $25,000 worth of Leica gear in the cargo hold of the airplane. He said, I've seen a theory.
In the Hessian sack, wasn't it? Yeah.
He said, I've seen a theory that as it was checked in luggage, the air within the lens caused the lens glass to explode. Now, I don't know. I did ask him on Facebook, you know, I sort of replied and said, do you mean like the air pressure inside gets greater because the air pressure outside has decreased and because it's a sealed unit, the air pressure inside the lens can't escape? He didn't reply to me, but I'm assuming that's what he meant. The only thing is, I'm sure thousands of other people before this have shipped lenses in the cargo holds of aeroplanes. And
yeah, I have many times.
Yeah, so I don't know.
But mine might have been air sealed, water sealed, nose sealed, you know, what else, yeah?
Steve also gave us a link to Brisbane Open House. This is sort of a follow-up to what I was talking about last week about the Sydney Open weekend, which is coming up in November. The Brisbane one is happening in about a month's time over the weekend of the 7th and 8th of October. So for anyone up in the north of the border, well, from where I am anyway, anyone in Queensland, the link will be in the show notes. Feel free to check that out. And Adam sent us three stories this week. A cricket reporter claims...
Oh, sec, just before we go any further, especially now we're almost at the end.
Yeah.
I'd like to dedicate this episode...
Yes.
...to Adam Davidson. Because Susan told us we had
to. Because Susan said so. Yes, that's right.
And now it's almost over. You get the last bit, Adam. Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Perfect. And good night then, Bruce.
Yeah. So cricket reporter claims iPhone calculator app is a light meter and gives measurements. This is just too silly for words. Link will be in the show notes for anyone who wants to check out that one. The mindset that's costing people their images. Digital photography is not free. I had a quick scan of this article just before we started recording, and essentially what this guy is saying is that when we all move to digital photography, you know, you buy memory cards once and you get to use them over and over and over and over again. It's not like film where you only get to use it once. And so this mindset developed that there was no cost involved in digital photography because you've bought your camera, you've bought your memory cards, and now you can just shoot forever. But he said the thing that most people don't account for is a backup strategy. You know, he said you give them a budget of $1,000, they'll spend $999 on the camera. He said you really need to factor in the cost of hard drives to back all of your stuff up, because particularly with magnetic drives that use spinning platters, they are mechanical devices and they will fail at some point. You know, and the day they do, if it's the only copy you've got, you're toast. So it's essentially his rant about backup strategies, and that's something we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast. And the last one, shooting the past.
That should be the name of your audio company, ad nauseum.
Thank you, mate. I'm sure someone's already done it.
I'm sure.
And the last story from Adam, Shooting the Past. This is a new show that's going to...
You can't do that. Doesn't matter how big a lens you've got.
Yeah, exactly. This is a show that's going to go to air on ABC Radio National. That's here in Australia. And it's all about... Well, I'll read you the blurb. Shooting the Past brings you Australian history by using a photograph to discover the story behind it. begins Friday, September the 1st at 1:30 p.m. on ABC Radio National, on ABC Radio app and iTunes.
So some of the best ways to look at photos on radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'd kind of think they'd put it on ABC 2 as a show rather than as an audio-only thing. But, hey, who knows?
What we're looking at here is a black-and-white photograph of a building. Now, the building, I'd say, it looks about six stories high, down the bottom. So it's very hard to describe a photo, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sure it'll be an interesting... Look, the ABC generally does very good documentary stuff, even on radio. So I'm sure it'll be worth a listen. For those that have got the time.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure they're doing a great job.
Yeah. And that's it for this week.
It is.
Other than David Marlin's book review, which we'll get to in a minute.
Really? Yeah. He's still doing that, isn't he?
He's still doing them. I think we're up to about number 38 or 39. He must have a lot of books on his bookshelf. Either that or he's still buying them.
I came up with an idea as well, just passed through my head just then.
Yep.
If you'd like an episode of Shutters Inc. dedicated to yourself, $10 on PayPal. If you'd like us not to dedicate an episode to you, $20 on PayPal.
There you go.
There you go.
Excellent.
Adam, I think you're going to put in about 60 cents worth, Adam, because you only got the last few minutes. Well, you have a good week.
Yeah, you too, mate.
And I'm sure we'll talk very soon.
Excellent.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right, mate. See ya. All right, as promised, David Marland, up with another book review. What do you got for us, David?
Thanks, Bruce. As a self-confessed bibliophile, I have a habit of going into bookshops in different places when I'm travelling, often with the hope of finding something new, particularly in the photography section, but often because I just like the feel and the smell and the atmosphere of a really good bookstore. Terry Pratchett, in his Discworld novels, described all university libraries and other libraries being mysteriously interconnected by what he called L space. I contend there's also a crossover to good bookstores. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if in one of these stores I put a book back on the shelf crookedly and a hairy orange arm came out and straightened it and rebuked me at the same time. For those of you who have not read Terry Pratchett, do so. For those who have, I can only say, ook. And you know exactly what I mean. If you find yourself in Dunedin, check out the university bookshop there. It sounds formidable, but it's not. It's quite a good store. In Hobart, by the way, the bookshop I rather like is the one just off Salamanca Place, which is also pretty good. And for lurking in Melbourne, the paperback books. All of this preamble is to introduce picked up while in Dunedin and added a couple of kilos to my luggage. Photo Box, the essential collection, 250 images you need to see. Thank goodness didn't say you need to see before you die. The book is published by Thames and Hudson, and it's their contribution to the genre of photo collections, like the Photo Book published by Phaidon and the couple of collections published by Taschen that we've reviewed. So what's different about this one? Well, it's originally written in Italian by Robert Koch, so there's a different flavour to the others and a bit of a more European view. But like the others, there's a mixture of well-known and lesser-known photographs, but mainly by well-known photographers. This book's divided by themes: reportage, war, portraits, nudes, women, travel, cities, art, fashion, still life, sport, and nature. Now, there seems to be a bit of overlap with some of those, like travel and cities, nudes and women, portraits and women. So that is one of the factors that makes this a little bit interesting. Now, each photo is accompanied by a thought-provoking description and a paragraph about the photographer. Some photographers are represented in two sections. For example, Robert Capa is in both war for one of the D-Day photos and portraits with one of his portraits of Pablo Picasso. But this peculiarity of the book is how the photos have been put into these different categories. Horst P. Horst's famous Mainbocker corset photo, which depicts a woman with her back to you in this lovely white corset, done in 1939, is amongst the nudes. But it's clearly a fashion photo. Herb Ritt's photo of Stephanie, Cindy, Christy, Tatiana, Naomi, Mario Cerretti's Kate Moss, and Miles Aldridge's A Dazzling Beauty are all nudes, but they're in the fashion section. Dazzling Beauty was in Vogue. Kate Moss was a Calvin Klein campaign. In both of these cases, it was about the atmosphere they created for the campaign, not the clothes that they weren't wearing. The Herb Ritt's photo of the five models seems only to be in fashion because they were at the time the top five supermodels, not necessarily part of a fashion spread. This seems to contrast a little bit with the fantastic nude of Naomi Campbell in the nude section. And that's just a few of them. There are quite a number of other photos that seem to be in odd locations. But there's no clear definition of what the sections mean, and the reader's left to contemplate, why did Roberto put this photo where he has? There's no clues in the text, but then again, this makes it one of the interesting parts of the book. Just thinking about why have some photos been put where they are is an interesting exercise and really demonstrates the fluidity of our art and how different people can view the world differently. Photo Box, 250 images you need to see. It's published by Thames and Hudson, and Booko has it from $21 to $46. Cheers.
Awesome, David. Thank you. Do you know what? I've been hearing about Terry Pratchett's Discworld for probably 3 or 4 years, and I really, really have to find the audio book and have a listen, because I keep hearing really good things about the series. Like, I understand there's a series of those novels. So definitely have to check that out. But fascinating books by the sounds of things too. Thank you. All right, that will do it for another week. And until we speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioToYou.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.